You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Over the blue line to Dylan Larkin. Now to Raymond. He shoots. He scores! Oh, my goodness!
Play the right way, you get chances, you get teams to crack a lot more earlier in the season.
You know, I heard Skinner say the teachers will crack any minute.
I gotta think about it for a while. All right, he's playing.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we're excited.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Brough, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the playoffs. That means more commercials, more advertisers, and more reads. This one comes courtesy Milwaukee Power Tools. The Milwaukee 100th Anniversary event tour is coming to Dick's Lumber in Burnaby this weekend from 7:30 to 3:30. Food truck live demos and more. Don't miss it.
Please don't make fun of Dick's Lumber.
It's Wednesday, 7:30 to 3:30. Someone texted in, an employee of Dick's Lumber said he's already concerned about parking. Get there early. Dick's Lumber, Milwaukee Power Tools,
rise
this Wednesday.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfeet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, I'm getting excited. Last night, we were doing scoreboard watching. Me and Brough were sending texts back and forth furiously, watching the results pile in across the NHL, trying to do the math on who's going to play who. I'm getting excited. Big show today, too, as we get closer and closer to the start of the playoffs. Greg Wyshynski is going to join us at 6:30 from ESPN. We'll go around everything that happened last night, everything that's going to happen over the next few days, including a bunch of big games tonight. Try and figure out that Eastern Conference playoff race. It's pretty exciting. 7:30, Pat Steinberg from Calgary is going to join the program. It is the final home game of the season tonight for your Vancouver Canucks. They are taking on the Calgary Flames at Rogers Arena. It's fan appreciation night at the Rog. Jerseys coming right off the players' backs at the end of the game. We'll get the Calgary side of things. We'll talk about the red-hot Andre Kuzmenko with Pat Steinberg at 7:30. 8 o'clock, Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of those Canucks. He will be on the call tonight. Canucks Flames, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. We'll talk to Batch about everything that's going on, including Thatcher Demko making his return to the lineup tonight. That's very exciting. Working in reverse on the guest list, 8 o'clock, Brendan Batchelor. 7:30, Pat Steinberg. 6:30, Greg Wyshynski. We have a lot to get into. So without further ado, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. For another day, we still have no clarity atop the Pacific Division. That's because the Canucks did not play yesterday. The Edmonton Oilers sort of played an NHL game, although they were taking on an AHL opponent in the San Jose Sharks. They won 9-2, so they are still in the running to finish atop the Pacific. Also, I suppose we should not discount the fact that if the Canucks do win their final two regular season games and the Dallas Stars do not get a single point out of their game on Wednesday against the St. Louis Blues, the Vancouver Canucks could move atop the Western Conference standings and finish first overall.
Yeah, it's all very unlikely, though. According to Sports Club stats, there's a 91% chance the Canucks will play the Preds in the first round.
We should mention
91%. That's pretty high.
Because of what happened last night with the Kings losing to the Minnesota Wild, it was almost guaranteed that the Nashville Predators were going to be the number one wild card team. It is now guaranteed. They are 100% locked in. So whoever is the second place finisher of the two division winners will play Nashville in the opening round. But there's still much to be decided in the West. Again, much to be decided across the National Hockey League because there's only two playoff series locked in right now. One is in the East, and kudos to the New York Islanders and Bo Horvat. They punched their ticket to the playoffs, so they will take on the Carolina Hurricanes in the opening round. And in the West, we only have one locked in, and that was done over the weekend, where the Winnipeg Jets will play the Colorado Avalanche.
So let's start with the Islanders. And for some reason, my thoughts immediately go to Pittsburgh, which is weird because they're not the Islanders. But I'm thinking of the Penguins and going, if they're looking at the Islanders, I'm wondering if Sidney Crosby's looking at the Islanders and going, we couldn't finish ahead of these guys.
How the hell are you in the playoffs?
Like, really? Really? Especially the way the Islanders looked like 10 games ago. They look like they were done. And they're going to make the playoffs with a significant goal differential.
And right now, 38 wins.
Minus 18 is their goal differential. The Penguins actually have a positive goal differential at plus 5. And I know that doesn't mean anything when the only thing that matters is the amount of points that you get. And the Islanders have 92 and the Penguins have 88. But still, like, this Islanders team, you know, I've heard a lot of people saying it's going to be a great series with Carolina. I'm like, really? I think it might be a short series with Carolina.
I don't have much hope for the Islanders either. I suppose if you're going to take anything from their regular season success, it's that they know how to get games late into games in overtime because they played a whole lot of them this year.
So I mean, look who they beat down the stretch, though, right?
They had a very favorable schedule down the stretch.
They beat Philly, Chicago, Columbus, Montreal, New Jersey. Yeah, they had an impressive win over the Rangers, and the same could be said, I suppose, for a home win over Nashville, but I still don't think the Predators are that good. And, you know, that might be a massive jinx, but we'll see. At any rate, congratulations, I suppose, to the Islanders.
Yeah, don't be a hater, bro. Do you want to hear from Patrick Waugh? Because he was very proud of his team.
Well, I mean, good for Patrick Waugh, right? He was hired to get the Islanders into a playoff spot, and he's succeeded.
So here is Patrick Waugh talking about just how proud he is of Bo Horvat and the rest of the crew following a 4-1 win against the Devils last night, punching their ticket to the playoffs.
Very, very, very proud. I mean, they played some very good hockey down the stretch, and they were resilient. They worked together. I mean, I think we learned how to win, and what I love is again today. I mean, tonight it was a 2-1 score. The score made it 2-1, and I felt like we were calm and we didn't change our game, and that's a really good sign. I mean, that makes me extremely proud of these guys.
So great. You beat the Devils. They're not good. They're going to miss the playoffs, too.
You are on your way to the playoffs, though, Patrick Waugh. Congratulations. You've got a date with the Carolina Hurricanes. We're actually going to work in reverse of the teams that are in or very close to being in, and then to the teams that are trying their best but are just going to fall short. The Washington Capitals. They are the only team left now of the Capitals, Flyers, Red Wings, and Penguins that control their own destiny. Somehow, by the grace of God,
I can't believe it.
Charlie Lindgren and Sonny Milano leading the charge.
And a minus 38 goal differential.
Yesterday, the Washington Capitals and Charlie Lindgren had a 16-save shutout against a very not interested Boston Bruins team yesterday, but who cares? The Caps win 2-0, huge win against the Bruins, win and they're in now. That's the situation for the Capitals, and here is their head coach, Spencer Carberry, talking about how proud he is of his team.
As good as we've seen on home ice when we needed it the most, I thought. The game, especially through the first two periods, was so clean. All the things we were doing with the puck, without the puck, the way we defended, all the we're losing guys. We had a few guys go down, but everybody was just so connected with everything that we were doing in all three zones. So it was impressive, and we needed it, obviously, to stay in this fight. And now it comes down to the last day.
So that loss by the Boston Bruins also brings into the possibility of Bruins-Leafs in the first round. Because the Bruins only have a one-point lead over the Florida Panthers. You said they were disinterested in their game. They should have been more interested if they want that first-place spot in the Atlantic Division.
Well, it was Charlie Coyle after the game was quoted as saying, we played a team that was looking to get into the playoffs, and we played like a team that was already in, and that's not good. And they just – I mean, if – put it this way, if you're getting 16 shots on goal against Charlie Lindgren and the Washington Capitals. You probably don't have your foot on the pedal and the pedal to the metal. You're probably taking it easy. I'm not sure what the Bruins want here, to be dead honest. It mostly comes down to whether or not you want, I guess, the home ice advantage throughout or what have you. But that'll be really interesting to see, because I'm not even sure from a Leafs perspective what's the better matchup there. I don't know if you want to take on the stingy Florida Panthers and a team that you asked for last year that swept you out of the playoffs, or whether you want the Boston Bruins. Anyway, the reason that we did it this way, talked about the Capitals and the Islanders first, is I don't know if you agree with me here, but I feel like the two least interesting of these teams are going to get in, and that's the Capitals and the Islanders, because I would have loved to have seen Detroit and Pittsburgh get in. The Detroit Red Wings.
If Detroit misses, I will miss them.
The Detroit Red Wings, for as flawed a team as they are and as dysfunctional an outfit as they can be at times, they play some of the most exciting hockey in the National Hockey League, especially down the stretch. So yesterday, game of the night, without question. Once again, the Red Wings are facing elimination. They got to get points out of this game against Montreal. They are down 4-1 in this game. When it's 4-2, someone at Little Caesars Arena chucks an octopus onto the ice. Then the comeback begins, and then with just over a minute left in regulation, and the sequence of play, we don't have the full thing, but Shane Gostisbehere makes a play at the blue line to keep the puck in, where he jumps approximately 35 feet in the air. Like, best vertical I've ever seen.
Good hops on that guy.
Yeah, unbelievable.
On skates.
Keeps the puck in, keeps the cycle going, and then it falls to Lucas Raymond. This is Lucas Raymond with a minute 17 left. Just listen to the energy as he ties up the game against Montreal.
Larkin, Gostisbehere, Perron, cuts to the middle. Now low, Raymond, chance to shoot. Lucas Raymond, 4-4, 1:17 to go.
So the Wings got what they needed to stay alive. They got the point there, but they could sure use that second point, right? They're playing a non-playoff team in Montreal. Guess who does it in overtime? It's Lucas Raymond yet again. People going bananas in Detroit. Wings win 5-4. Here's what it sounded like.
Lead pass in for Larkin. In space for Raymond. He scores! Lucas Raymond! Overtime winner!
Like, they're an absolutely insane team.
He's clutch, man.
But nothing they do makes sense. They played Toronto over the weekend in another must-win game. They're leading 4-1. They blow the 4-1 lead. They manage to get it back in overtime. Last night, they're down 4-1, rally, and then they have this. They're playing with the most energy and the best vibes, but unfortunately, they don't control their own fate. Is they're going to need help, just like all these other teams not named Washington, to get into the playoffs. So what we're looking at here is Washington, real simple. They take on Philadelphia, win, and they're in. And that kind of wraps up the story in the East. And that'll be at a great loss, I think, for NHL fans. This Detroit team is exciting. Mm-hmm. They haven't been in the playoffs in a long time. They, to me, are the biggest story. The second biggest story, the Pittsburgh Penguins, who also, because they left it a little bit too late, and although they had a pretty big win yesterday over Nashville, it looks like they're going to, I mean, their odds right now are somewhere in the neighborhood of like 16% or something like that. It looks like they're going to be on the outside looking in as well. Again, another big game from Sidney Crosby and Erik Karlsson, a goal and an assist each. Penguins remain in contention for the playoffs with a 4-2 win over Nashville, but it looks as though they're going to fall short because they're going to need help on the out-of-town scoreboard, and they're going to need to win their final game of the season if they have any shot of getting into the playoffs.
So there's only two first-round series that are absolutely locked up. One is in the West, and that is Colorado versus Winnipeg, and the other's obviously in the East, and that is the Islanders and Carolina. Now, there are a few people texting in and saying, wait a minute, if Vegas wins their last two home games, wouldn't they move ahead of Nashville for the first wildcard spot?
They're like,
yeah. But they'd also move ahead of the Kings. So Vegas would then be in third place in the division, and the Kings would drop down into a wildcard spot. And the Kings cannot move ahead of Nashville.
Right. Nashville is locked into the first wildcard.
Yeah, Nashville's locked into that. Okay. Yeah. So because of what happened last night, just a few people. I know most people aren't, but a few people are are texting in about that, so I just wanted to address it.
They're trying
it.
To do the gotcha thing. It's like, actually, guys.
I think you should take a closer look at the standings.
Maybe you want to relook at the Western Conference standings. Buddy, I've looked. This was like the guy yesterday that was convinced somehow that Detroit could have survived the weekend. He kept texting in. He's like, you don't understand. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I don't know what to tell
Look,
you.
Look, I have a giant playoff standings matchup on my wall. I'm looking at it right now.
Now, in the defense of all of our listeners.
It is confusing sometimes.
And we get a lot of things wrong on the program.
Yeah, that is also true.
So you guys are more than right to text in with your, well, actually.
You're right to doubt us.
Yes. Honestly, this time of year, my eyes kind of start glazing over. It's just so there's so many possibilities and potentials.
I'm just disagree with that analysis.
Can we just start the playoffs now, please?
I am excited. Look, but this is how you get excited.
I know you love
the
playoffs.
Well, no, like last night.
This guy can hop this guy, and this guy can match with this guy, and this guy falls under this guy.
Detroit last night was playoff hockey.
Oh, that was
great. Was do or die. The energy was crazy. They were going nuts. That's it. That's what's getting me excited. I miss that. I miss a win being celebrated like it is the biggest thing you could possibly do on the planet.
Totally.
Even though you got to come back two nights later and do the exact same
thing. Well, I think it's especially true in Detroit because they haven't seen the playoffs for so long.
This is playoff hockey for them, and they're going to miss.
I have Detroit, like the standings open here. Their goal differential is hilarious. Like the Red Wings have scored more than the Florida Panthers.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem is they've given up almost 100 more goals against the Panthers.
Yeah.
It's actually a wild team.
It's actually interesting. If you were in charge of them, you kind of wonder what you'd do in the off season or what direction you chart for them, because you don't want to take away from any of the excitement that the Red Wings have, and you don't want to take away from any of the exciting young goal scorers that they have, but you also need to learn to defend. Like, if you look at their last three games, it's almost the story of the Red Wings season.
They're all shootouts.
They didn't go
to the shootout.
Yeah,
but they all went to overtime.
So they went to Pittsburgh. They lost 6-5 in overtime. They went to Toronto. They won 5-4 in overtime. And last night at home versus Montreal, they win 5-4 in overtime. So, yeah, I mean, Laddie's 100% right. Like, this team knows how to score. But then sometimes you watch them and you're kind of like, you guys have any idea what you're doing in the defensive zone?
I have a question for Steve Yzerman and the Detroit Red Wings. How good would you look with a couple of defensemen like Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek? Just wondering.
They need to defend more.
Well, I mean, their biggest issue right now is their blue line, I would say. There's a lot of guys there that are very run-of-the-mill defensemen playing huge minutes.
You're just trying to dunk on them for Zadina, basically.
They traded away Hronek because they didn't want to. I mean, granted, they didn't want to deal with what the Canucks are about to deal with in the offseason with his contractual status. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, the Canucks are going to the playoffs with a first pair of guys that one was a Detroit Red Wing and the other one was in their lap. They could have taken him and they didn't, so I do like dunking on them for that, by the way.
Vegas and the Edmonton Oilers, all of a sudden, that is looking like a probability as opposed to a possibility.
Sorry. That's a heck of a series.
Sorry, I missed that. What?
Vegas and the Oilers is now looking like a probability as opposed to a possibility.
LA last night losing to Minnesota on home ice, by the way, where they were receiving some boos after the second period. That was costly for them because it really just sort of it ruled out moving in, like falling into the first wild card, which was a possibility.
I love your idea yesterday. Put Dallas and the Kings together so we can kind of ignore them.
Yeah, I was quietly cheering yesterday for the Minnesota Wild. Like Kaprizov banked the puck in off Cam Talbot to make it 3-0. I was like, yes, because I could see the standings falling the way that I wanted them to. Like put LA and Dallas in the I don't care bracket. It doesn't, you know what? That series doesn't even have to be on TV. You can just tell me the result when it's over and then they become relevant, right? Like I mean,
there's going to be some Stars fan out there that's like, "How can you guys call them boring? They score a lot of goals. They have Jason Robertson." And you're like, "Yeah, still it's the fan bases that I don't care about."
It's not
for me
that,
it is at least.
It's not that I don't care about them. I don't. But it's not that I don't care about them. It's just that if they're going to win and they're going to advance anyway, just go ahead. Like, pass go and collect your $200 and we'll catch you on the other side.
So now we know it's going to be the best series of all.
It's probably going to be
totally.
It's going to be a huge electric factory of a series. I'm going to be like, damn, I wish I hadn't have done that. No.
I think that did actually happen a few years ago. There was a series, or maybe it was even last year, there was a series.
Was it the Minnesota series?
We called it, it might have been. Like the We Don't Care series, and it was like an amazing series. I was like, all right, we'll watch it. Fine,
I'll watch game
7. All right, let's talk about the Vancouver Canucks because they are in action tonight against the Calgary Flames. two objectives tonight. One, clinch the division and make the Winnipeg game on Thursday meaningless. So it gives you all sorts of options. You can rest guys. You can play Thatcher Demko or you can not play Thatcher Demko. Speaking of Thatcher Demko, number two, the objective is to get Demko back up to speed. Is one game enough? Is it going to be enough for Thatcher Demko to be like, all right, I'm ready for game one of the playoffs, one game against Andre Kuzmenko and the Calgary Flames? Yeah. Yesterday at practice, the forward lines were, the lineup was pretty much the same as the one, or it was the same as the one that went up against the Edmonton Oilers and beat the Edmonton Oilers over the weekend. So that means that, yes, the third line, but with Elias Lindholm is still a thing with Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua, means that Pugh Suter is still with Brock Besser and JT Miller. It means that Mikheyev is still with Pedersen and Hoglander. But everyone's eyes are going to be on Thatcher Demko tonight. And here's Rick Tocchet. Do we have this audio of Rick Tocchet talking about how hard Thatcher Demko has worked in order to get back to this position where he can play, which is two games left in the regular season?
Since he's been out, you know, he's at the rink twice a day. He's by himself sometimes with a therapist. He's here at 7 a.m. He's here at 7 o'clock, like 7 p.m. He's worked really hard to get to this position. And, you know, like really hard. He's probably accelerated the process because he worked so hard. I think that's contagious. And it just shows other players, you know, the dedication and how bad he wanted to come back and help this team.
So it's great that he worked hard. I mean, we all know that Thatcher Demko works hard. But it also makes you wonder, geez, if the playoffs hadn't been started like now, like how much longer would he be out? And it just makes me very curious to see how he's going to look tonight. Now, as for Thursday's game, all the reporters around Rick Tocchet tried to get him to answer questions about, you know, what if this, what if that? And Rick Tocchet wasn't really having any of it, although we know, like, Rick Tocchet wasn't like, these questions are ridiculous or anything.
Sure.
He wasn't angry at the questions, but he was just like, listen, there's a lot of what ifs right now. You know, what if the Canucks don't clinch the division tonight? What if they need to go to Winnipeg and actually get a win in order to clinch the division? That kind of changes everything. What if Thatcher Demko, you know, these aren't Rick Tocchet words, but he basically said, listen, I'm not going to address what ifs. Mm-hmm. We're going to deal with the game tonight against the Calgary Flames, and then we'll reassess. Because if you think about it, there are all sorts of what ifs. I already talked about one. What if the Canucks lose tonight to Calgary and they still have to clinch the division, so they have to go to Winnipeg and, you know, get a result at least? What if Thatcher Demko looks shaky? What if he looks rusty and you're thinking, ugh, like to get maybe one more game? Doesn't even matter if it's a meaningless game. One more game for Thatcher Demko.
It's just a meaningless game. You don't have to play him the whole thing. Play him half. Hey, take him out midway through.
You can play him at center if you want.
Yeah, you can really do whatever you want. The rules are really
now
open.
You're on to something.
Yeah.
Get his skating legs back.
Yeah, come on.
You
know? Oh, really?
Come on, Thatch. You got to get in.
Hold
on,
everybody.
Take some face-offs.
Everybody. We got breaking news out of Buffalo.
Sportsnet 650. Breaking news.
Well, the Buffalo Sabres didn't even wait for the end of the regular season. They have fired head coach Don Granato and assistant coach Jason Christie and video coordinator Matt Smith. This comes courtesy.
He's like, what did I do?
did the Germans from The Simpsons buy the Buffalo Sabres? This is how.
To announce the following layoffs.
Sorry, Don Granato, but and Jason Christie and Matt Smith, but this is how the Buffalo Sabres tweeted it out. The following members of the coaching staff have been relieved of their duties. Head coach Don Granato, assistant coach Jason Christie, video coordinator Matt Smith. They did not say that is all.
I was hoping they would have.
They should have gone that is all. But like, that's a very Was that like a follow? Was that, they just threw that out there?
Like a shot fired almost.
It was a post on
It was nothing like, there was nothing on like, we'd like to thank these guys for.
They should have done, the following people have not been laid off.
List the whole organization.
Okay, so all joking aside, I do want to say that this was kind of hinted at from a variety of Buffalo Sabres writers, including, I think Mike Harrington was on top of this vibe or sentiment that although Granato was well-liked by the players, he wasn't getting the results. And this is an organization that has a history of a very, very short timeline and very, very much a lack of patience when it comes to getting results from their head coach. Since 2013, so in an 11-year span, this team has had the following coaches: Lindy Ruff, Ron Rolston, Ted Nolan, Dan Bylsma, Phil Housley, Ralph Kruger, and now Don Granato. That is a lot of coaches to run through in the same period of time where the Tampa Bay Lightning have basically had one head coach, John Cooper. This was another disappointing season for the Buffalo Sabres. I think a lot of people thought that they were going to take the leap that the Detroit Red Wings have taken this year, where they were right into the thick of the playoff chase until the very end. The results were not there. And Don Granato, as I mentioned, although very much liked by the players, ultimately did not get the results. Barely a better winning percentage than his predecessors like Kruger and Housley.
Greg Wyshynski will join us next to talk about this breaking Sabres news, as well as all the other stories in the NHL, including the Arizona Coyotes. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
We regret to announce the following layoffs, which I will read in alphabetical order. Simpson, Homer. That is all.
It's Canuck Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
On a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, who just found out, courtesy of Greg and Andy, that Don Granato has been fired as the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. Greg Wyshynski is going to join us in just a moment here in the highlight hour one. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. With all the news going in and around the NHL this morning with regards to the playoffs, who's in, who's out, who's clinching, who's not, the Buffalo Sabres decided to throw another bit of news onto the fire by dismissing head coach Don Granato hours after they finished their regular season last night with a win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, it's interesting that the Don Granato era ended at the hands of John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning, because John Cooper is the longest tenured head coach in the National Hockey League. The Buffalo Sabres, in that time frame where John Cooper has been the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, have gone through the following coaches: Lindy Ruff, Ron Rolston, Ted Nolan, Dan Bylsma, Phil Housley, Ralph Kruger, and now Don Granato. They will be looking for, I believe, their eighth head coach in the last 11 years.
You know what's funny, though? Only five NHL coaches had held their job longer than Don Granato.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
a lot of coaches have been fired.
It is a league where you're hired to be fired, and they do change them with great regularity, but the Buffalo Sabres do it more than most. Joining us now to discuss all this and more, our good buddy from ESPN, Greg Wyshynski, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Greg. How are you?
I was in a bunker tracking audio for a video essay about the Stanley Cup playoffs when Kevin Adams had the nerve to fire a coach during a time in which I was not writing.
I got to say, I know that we should have maybe expected this because, you know, when the regular season ends, teams often don't waste any time dismissing their coaches. But this one did catch me a little off guard. Maybe it's just because it was so sudden. But there were rumblings coming out of Buffalo that while the players loved Don Granato, maybe the front office and the executive weren't all that thrilled with the on-ice results. Were you surprised when you heard about this, courtesy of our lovely production staff here at 650?
Are these rumblings associated with anybody with a functioning retina that can look at the standings?
Because that's kind of where
my head was at insofar as where his job stability might be. Look, they're clearly a team that underachieved this year. There's reasons for it. Getting only half a good season from Tage Thompson. The defense not playing well for the majority of the season in front of young, unproven goaltending. There's a lot of reasons why the Sabres failed. But ultimately, the sense I've gotten from people in talking to people around the organization and that know the organization is that he's simply the guy that got them to a certain point, and now you get the guy that gets them over the hump. Like, that's kind of where it is right now with him with regard to the Buffalo Sabres. I think somebody phrased it to me earlier this season as, at some point, the teacher has to become the professor. You know what I mean? And, like, I don't know if Donnie Meatballs, God bless him, once and future guest on The Drop, our podcast, has that gravitas to really get the team to the next level. So, you know, it was expected. Not a shocker to see it happen. I will be very intrigued to see in what direction they go, because it does seem like they're in that spot of needing a guy that can come in with a little bit of experience and a little bit of track record. But at the same time, I mean, let's face it, it's going to be fascinating to see what some of these teams do because of the Spencer Carberry effect, where, I mean, how many of us really thought he was going to squeeze as much as he squeezed out of the Capitals this year, right? And that's a guy that didn't have a Stanley Cup pedigree. So before we all dive in and pay Todd McClellan, you know, $4.5 million, like, maybe there's some other options. Maybe we think outside the box for situations like Buffalo.
Well, I was actually going to ask you, do you have any good ideas for who might be able to coach the Buffalo Sabres?
Well, I mean, it's the names that are just out there. I mean, like, McClellan, Woodcroft's out there. The one name that's really interesting and that whose name perks up the ears of a lot of people in Buffalo is Lindy Ruff. I mean, it's a reunion you wouldn't expect, but as far as, like, veteran coaches who know the market, who recently got something out of a younger team, and I don't think that all of this season from the Devils saw Lindy Ruff, stranger things have happened. And I think there's a certain, and maybe, like you said, you know, the amount of coaches they've had since Lindy was fired maybe has engendered some goodwill towards him. But I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility that there could be a reunion there.
We were just discussing this earlier in the show. If the Red Wings don't make the playoffs, will you miss them? They're pretty entertaining.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I mean, I'll miss them only because not only are they entertaining, but also the novelty of seeing a team make the cut for the first time in 8 seasons. I mean, it'd be cool to see the Red Wings back in the playoffs. It'd be cool to see Red Wings playoff hockey at that arena for, I think, what, like the first time maybe? I mean, when did that arena open? So, like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons to want it. The novelty of, you know, via the playoff seedings, the novelty of seeing Patrick Kane against the Rangers would be kind of fun, too. So, like, there's a lot of reasons to want the Red Wings to make the cut in that 8th spot, but that is obviously entirely contingent on the Washington Capitals at this point.
What do you think the Red Wings do this offseason?
I don't know. That's a good question because, like, They're young in some spots. They've got a decent prospect pipeline, but nothing that's really, you know, blows you away insofar as, like, tippy-top prospects. They're a bit more of a veteran-laden team than people probably give them credit for. So it is going to be interesting to see what they do. I mean, I do expect Kane is going to stay there. I think he's really liked his time there, and I think that he's found a nice fit there. And then it's just a matter of how they want to color around the edges. That team seems ripe to try to figure out how to package something for a top line center not a top line center, but a center that, that can certainly, like, bolster them behind Larkin.
So the Islanders made the playoffs. Do you give them much of a chance against Carolina?
I don't give myself much of a chance to make it through that series. We've seen this movie before. The Islanders are workmanlike and efficient. If I'm being honest, like, I'm much more excited to see Carolina advance from that series than the Islanders because, you know, the idea of, like, Dugensel and Kuznetsov push them over the top. They're a tough out. They're getting really good goaltending, and they certainly have some guys that can you know, win a tightly played game. And that's kind of the fun of that series, is like to test the theorem on Carolina. Like, this is going to be a series in which there's not going to be a whole hell of a lot of margin between those two teams. And so the question becomes, does Gensel and does Kuznetsov give them the thing that they need to win these one goal games that sometimes go against them? But I don't think Carolina is unconfident going into that series against the Islanders. Let's put it that way.
So there's only two playoff series that are official right now. One is the one we just discussed, and that's Carolina and the Islanders. And the other is Winnipeg and Colorado. Colorado will probably, well, maybe. It's going to be a close race, but I would vote for Nathan MacKinnon for the Hart Trophy. And yet I look at the goaltending in that series, with Winnipeg having the likely Vezina Trophy winner and Colorado, well, to put it likely, not having the likely Vezina winner. Gorgiev, how much worry should Avs fans have about their goaltending?
It's beyond the goaltending. It's the fact that, you know, the Avalanche have kind of skidded into the curve a little bit towards the end of the season, while Winnipeg has found the groove again, man. Like, this is a series I'm very concerned about for the Avalanche. It's hard to imagine them going out in the first round of consecutive seasons. And especially it's hard to imagine them losing in the first round, given how MacKinnon has showed the ability to put that team on his back and you know, win by himself in some cases down the stretch. But like, Winnipeg's not a team you want to be playing at this point in the season. Like, they're playing really good hockey. They've shown when they're on their game previously this season that they can defend as well as anybody. And then you have Hellebuck back there too. It's going to be a crazy scene, I think, in Winnipeg for that series too, as far as home ice. So I don't know. I mean, I hesitate to ever bet against Colorado and Nathan MacKinnon, especially with the way that he's played. But there are definitely some reasons to believe that they could be in trouble in that series against Winnipeg. By the way, I still think I'm a Kucherov guy. I got to crunch the numbers one more time this week and really see it for myself, as far as like what the numbers tell us. But it's just the gap between Kucherov and Point on that team is just remarkable. And, you know, the things that he's done to elevate that team are remarkable. I don't think there's a wrong answer. There might be a righter answer than the rest, but I'm still kind of team Kucherov, I think, at this point.
Sounds like you're wavering a little bit, but last week you were very much solidified with team Kucherov.
Well, I'm a man of science, and I tend to check all the data points to see what they say before making a decision. And so I still got to see where you know, how many, you know, percentage of goals they had a hand in. You know, I think the problem with Kucherov in his candidacy is that there are going to be players that have better defensive metrics than him. But do you hold it against a guy who is told, hey, just score and don't play defense, if he just scores and doesn't play defense? I don't know. These are a lot of questions. But again, like, that's the joy of the Hart race this year, is that it's not some, you know, fake Greg Wyshynski philosophical, this guy finished a point out of the playoffs, so should he win argument. It's all these guys are on playoff teams, and how do we how do we pick the right one? It's going to be a really fun experiment to see exactly where the votes go this year.
Who do you think Florida would rather play, Toronto or Tampa Bay? Because that is worth noting, because Florida still has a chance to leapfrog the Boston Bruins for first place in the division, because the Bruins lost to the Capitals yesterday.
I think that they would probably want to play Tampa, to be honest with you. Like, I still feel like Tampa is a team that's top heavy, and I still feel like that Vasilevskiy has not shown the same levels of consistency that you want out of him in the playoffs. And lately Tampa has not exactly played their best hockey either. I think they can win either series. But the Lightning, to me, I didn't pick them to make the playoffs. I was wrong on that, but the fact still remains that this is still a team that not only entered the season with a problem in their depth of it not being of the same quality as in previous seasons, but now you compound that with not having Sergachev to deal with, you know, all of the scoring that the Panthers can throw at you, and that might be a tough matchup for the Lightning.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Greg, it's now time for the Arizona Coyotes discourse. We were waiting for the back half of this call. By the way, if anyone is surfing the internet today, you and Kristen and Ryan have a great, very lengthy, very like explain all piece up on ESPN.com about the move from the Arizona Coyotes going to Utah. Now, the one major narrative that's kind of, you know, moved to the forefront of the last couple of days is the deal that Alex Morello is getting for being a rather inefficient owner over the last little while and how displeased a lot of people are with it. And that goes all the way from fellow owners to executives to players. What can you tell us about that aspect of this, that Morello seems to be getting a pretty sweetheart deal, despite the fact that he hasn't been a very good owner of the Arizona Coyotes?
I don't understand that narrative at all. Like, I understand that people are trying to, like, take their shots at the guy for not paying his hotel bills and things of that nature. As if, you know, I'm sorry, is this the first time you've ever dealt with a Las Vegas land developer? Like, they don't pay their bills. It's canonical at this point. This guy spent the money to acquire a distressed asset. And during that time, the NHL's franchise valuations and the revenue that teams bring in and the worth of franchises because of expansion and sales has skyrocketed. And so, like, this whole thing of, like, wow, he fumbled his way into $1 billion. No, he invested in a team, and he owns a team, and the market decided that transaction is worth $1 billion. It's a weird deal to be like, you know, we're rewarding a guy for his ineptitude. We're rewarding a guy because he happened to be, you know, invest in something that clearly has, you know, doubled and plus in value during his time as his brief time as majority owner. Again, like, that's a separate issue than should he own another team?
That's the question that I've got. Should he really be given that, you know, should he really be given the chance to own another team in the NHL?
Look, we're all hung up on this, right? The percentage chance that this guy wins the land auction this summer and gets all of the things that need to happen done, including where the water is coming from, and gets this facility under construction, shovels in the ground in 2025, and actually sees this whole thing to completion, and still has the money left over to buy an expansion franchise. The odds on that are quite long. The NHL knows the odds on that are quite long. Now, he is a very defiant guy. He is a very stubborn guy. He's going to try to do this. And it's not simply just verbiage in a contract that they are going to try to, like, bring an expansion team back to Phoenix and have him be the owner. Like, he's going to try to do it, but the odds of him doing it are pretty long, in my opinion. And it is obvious to anyone who sees how this thing is going down that the NHL had to do something dramatic in their negotiation to make sure that Alex Morello didn't sue them for the next 3 years if they tried to take the team away from him. And the way to do that was to continue to allow him to try to develop this land and give him another shot at owning the team if it actually happens.
Is the NHL allowed to sabotage him? Like, could Gary Bettman go spread toxic waste at the land auction site or something like that? Because, like, you know, that's not something that I would necessarily, you know, assume that Gary Bettman would not do.
But here's the thing: like, they don't dislike him. Like,
they don't.
I mean, I think they're annoyed at him. But when Bettman said, if you read the what Bettman has said about this team, it's never about Morello, and I've heard behind the scenes that it's not necessarily about Morello, although there are some things that have happened recently that maybe will come out that where they are kind of pissed at us. I can't talk about that now. I don't have it sourced well enough. But overall, I think they see this as a franchise that's a victim of circumstance and some circumstances of its own making. The situation in Glendale falling apart, that's not necessarily all on Morello. That definitely led over to the Tempe vote. And again, the team and the league both thought they were going to win that vote. If they win that vote, we're not even having this conversation right now. And so I think Bettman sees it as you need a reset. You need to figure out this arena thing. And then maybe when that happens, there's a bit more stability with this owner who they don't dislike. But again, everything's going to have to fall in place in a certain way. And I give the NHL a ton of credit for coming up with an ingenious way to get that team out of the market while they figure out the arena, not have it, you know, just fester in Mullet Arena until 2027. It's not fair to the market. It's not fair to the players. So I give them credit for finding a way to do this. But the most credit goes to Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, not only ponying up between $1.2 and $1.3 billion for a team, but doing so for a fake relocated team. It's not a true relocation, mm-hmm. you know, but you're getting hockey ops and the players, but you're not getting any of the IP or what the team used to be. He wanted an expansion team, rightfully so. Look at Vegas, look at Seattle, look how they're set up for success in ways that the Arizona Coyotes are not right now. And he decided to play ball with the NHL and take on a relocated team instead. And really did him solid. Like he is the reason why this is happening, and it's happening because he kind of swallowed his pride a little bit and took on a distressed franchise versus getting a brand new shiny one.
One final question: do they have a guarantee that there's going to be a new arena in Salt Lake? I know the Olympics is coming. Yeah, because it would be hilarious if they went to Salt Lake and the whole thing played out exactly like the way it played out in Phoenix, because they're going into an arena that is a lot like the arena that the Coyotes went into when they moved from Winnipeg.
Well, it's there's no guarantee. They're hoping because of the Olympics there might be one. But the only guarantee they have from Ryan Smith is that he's going to put money into Delta Center to make it more hockey friendly. Like the exhibition games that they've had there with the LA Kings, it's okay. It's not great. It's better than, say, like Barclays Center was for the Islanders, but it's not necessarily a hockey centric building. And he's talked about pretty candidly with the league putting money into that place and making it more friendly to hockey. But no, there is zero guarantee that a new building will be built. And I am intrigued, boys, to see little blips of skepticism kind of trickling out now that this Utah thing is coming to fruition. Brian Burke, I think on the radio yesterday, offered a lot of skepticism about the market. I was texting with somebody who's very much in the know that was kind of bemoaning the fact that they're going to SLC and saying it's not going to be a long-term success. So it's been all, you know, candy and roses so far with Ryan Smith in that market. And I'm interested to see what the rest of the story ends up being when this move takes place this week.
I mean, is the biggest difference with that the scenario that Bruff laid out, that they're kind of going into a similar situation that they were originally in Arizona, is that the ownership is much more stable, and Ryan Smith is kind of like the king of Salt Lake City in Utah. Like, when I heard him speak about the Olympics and getting a new arena, like, there was a guy that he went beyond confident. He was just like, this is going to happen because he's got the money, they've got the land, and they want the Olympics. And hearing him talk about it, it makes a little bit more sense that he can probably get things done as opposed to a fledgling group in Arizona.
Yeah. And again, like you mentioned the article that we wrote on ESPN.com. At the end of the article is a timeline that I wrote of the Coyotes' existence in Arizona.
Yep.
It was very painful. It made me think of a lot of Glendale City Council meetings that I had to sit through at 2 a.m. while I was streaming them on my laptop. But, you know, the origin story of the Coyotes was that they weren't even supposed to be in Arizona. They were supposed to be in Minnesota. That's where the guys who bought the Winnipeg Jets wanted to move the team, was Minnesota. So Arizona was like second choice this entire time. And that is obviously not the case when it comes to Ryan Smith. Like, Ryan
Safe.
Smith wanted a team. He's going to get a team. He believes he's going to get a new arena. He's a well-funded owner. It's not about the ownership or the building. I think those will take care of themselves. It's about the market and about, you know, whether what that support ultimately looks like, and what does that support look like vis-a-vis other markets where the ceiling could be a bit higher, like Houston and Atlanta, which may still get teams. But, you know, we're going to Salt Lake because they have an arena, an owner that wanted to buy a team, and a team, the Arizona Coyotes, that was playing in a college arena with 5,000 fans every night.
Greg, this was great, bud. Thanks for taking the time to do it. We'll do this again next Tuesday, and that might be the morning of the Canucks playoff opener.
Interesting. Yeah. Awesome. Well, from going forward, I'm going to use your producer as sources said in my story. Clearly plugged in. Incredible work.
Sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Okay, in the next hour, Pat Steinberger's Steinberg, not Berger, is going to join us from Calgary to talk about the Flames and Andrei Kuzmenko and maybe what's next for Calgary this offseason as they're going to miss the playoffs. The Flames are also the opponent of the Vancouver Canucks tonight at Rogers Arena, with the Canucks looking to clinch the division. All they need is 1 point, and they'll clinch the division. And for them, at least, they will make Thursday's game in Winnipeg meaningless from a standings perspective. We got an open segment on the other side, so anything you want to discuss, text in to the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. What do you guys think about Thatcher Demko and how many starts he's going to need before the playoffs start? Is this a matter of we'll see how he looks tonight and then we'll reassess, which is what Rick Tocchet said? Or do you think he definitely needs two games or just one game? How do you think the Canucks should approach their final two games? Thoughts on any other potential playoff series, the standings, anything going on in the NHL, the Sabres head coaching situation, the Arizona situation? The Dunbar Lumber text line is open. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.